Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhi Tamastoma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Hare Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Chapter 11 The Beda Kirtan Pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Verse 2, 11, 190 to 192, page 45. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exalted Haridas Thakur, saying, At every moment you take your bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage, and at every moment you perform great sacrifices, austerity, and charity. You are constantly studying the four Vedas, and you are far better than any Brahmin or sannyasi. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then recited the following verse. My dear Lord, one who always keeps your holy name on his tongue becomes greater than an initiated brahmana, although he may be born in a family of dog-eaters, and therefore by material calculation may be the lowest among men. He is still glorious. This is the wonderful effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord. It is therefore concluded that one who chants the holy name of the Lord should be understood to have performed all kinds of austerities and great sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. He has already taken his bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage. He has studied all the Vedas. He is actually an Arya. Srila Prabhupada. The word Aryan means advanced. Unless one is spiritually advanced, he cannot be called an Aryan. And this is the difference between Aryan and non-Aryan. Non-Aryans are those who are not spiritually advanced. By following the Vedic culture, by performing great sacrifices, and by becoming a strict follower of the Vedic instructions, one may become a Brahmana, a sannyasi, or an Aryan. It is not possible to become a Brahmana, sannyasi, or Aryan without being properly qualified. Bhagavad Dharma never allows one to become a cheap Brahmana, sannyasi, or Aryan. The qualities or qualifications described herein are quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 3.33.7 and were spoken by Devahuti, the mother of Kapiladeva, when she understood the influence of devotional service, bhakti yoga. In this way, Devahuti praised the devotee, pointing out his greatness in all respects. 2.11.193.195. Saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took Haridas Thakur within the flower garden, and there, in a very secluded place, he showed him his residence. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu requested Haridas Thakur, Remain here and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. I shall personally come here to meet you daily. Remain here peacefully and look at the chakra on the top of the temple and offer obeisances. As far as your prasadam is concerned, I shall arrange to have that sent here. Yes?
Anyone who belongs to the Varnashram system is considered Aryan?
I mean, in general, you would say like that. But here is the main thing is that they're spiritually advanced. That will be the real sign of it. But basically, practicing the Varnashram system, you know, with the idea to elevate yourself, that's then the proper position.
Devi Varnashram.
Yes, Devi. Like that. That's like that. Yeah.
Because, you know, when they map, you know, first there's the Buddhist theory of the Aryan invasion.
Right.
You know, when you look at the map, they show Aryan, anything beyond the Sindhu River, they consider Aryan civilizations. Practically anyone in India was part of the Aryan civilization.
Yes. Yes, because it is. It's about spiritual elevation and all that. So in that way, you can say that's the Aryan aspect, like that. But even before, when it was bigger, means it's like Iran was originally Aryan.
Yes.
And then the tribes there, the Alans, yes, they're the Aryans.
Yes.
Like that. Though, you know, I'm not sure it worked out so well for Rome, but like that. But it's there. So basically, the word gets taken as meaning advanced rather than advanced spiritually. But because actual advanced, it means that advancement of the soul. But otherwise, if you just think you're superior, like culturally or things like that, then it's not a full understanding of the term. You know, just like we say Varnashram, then they're practicing and they're part of Varnashram, but when they actually see it connected to the Lord and it's Daiva Varnashram, then you can actually say that's actually the purpose of Varnashram. Because the material world's been created by Krishna to give the living entity an opportunity to go back to Godhead. That's what it's for. You know, and at the same time as those who aren't, you know, aren't in that mood of willingness, then they're not going to give any trouble to those in the spiritual realm. But at the same time as their free will is there, they're working with Krishna's energy, they're, you know, living a life as an individual, and, you know, until they figure out that something's missing here. And so when they come in contact with the Vaishnavas, they have an understanding that there must be something more. Then they're able to actually take advantage of the Varnashram system. This Varnashram system is not a goal. It's a tool used by the Vaishnavas. The main thing is your direct activities of sadhana. That will bring you to bhava. Varnashram maintains the body. That's what it's for. Like that. It just maintains structure and organization. You know, maintains the body. You're looking for, you know, anything within dharma, arbita, kama, moksha. It's there in the Varnashram system. You want to be freed from material distresses, you follow Varnashram. You're looking for a little bit of money, then Varnashram. You want to engage the senses, Varnashram. You want to know what you should do, not do, that's Varnashram. You know, or you can speculate, and then you can go on being miserable in the material world like everybody else. You know, but as long as you're trying to be Krishna conscious, then, you know, how you say, a little misery never hurt. But but one shouldn't be out of one side of the mouth talking community and the other side of the mouth saying, you know, we don't accept Varnashram. That's like, you know, say, I'm hungry, so have some food. No, you know. But the main point we see here is Aryan, he's being glorified because he's fully engaged himself and the perfection of all aspects of religion. See, it's because in the Vedic system, religion means the inherent nature of something, and that it's an activity that's to be engaged for elevation. Right? So the ultimate elevation means Krishna consciousness. So we see here, and Lord Chaitanya is talking about taking bath in holy places. You know, pilgrimage, holy place, that's one aspect of religion. You know, it's one kind. Great sacrifices, that's also another religious aspect. Austerity is another one. Charity is another one. Studying the Vedas is another one. Like that. Renunciation, or, you know, performing your rituals and rules and regulations. Like that. Okay. Taking initiation, you know, properly. Austerities, sacrifices, taking back, all these things. These are all the religious processes. And so the Vedic religious processes are the most efficient for elevating you. Others don't have such developed religious processes. Because religion is not a faith. Religion is a system in which you're dealing with something in its natural form so that you can elevate yourself. That's what, because religion you can change. I mean, today you can be into yajnas and that, tomorrow you could be into, you know, charity, the next day you could be into pilgrimage. So religion can change. But the Sanatan Dharma, the actual inherent nature of the soul being a servant, that will never change. So therefore, you serve through these religious processes. And so when they're directed towards the Lord, then you get the spiritual benefit. If they're directed simply at other living entities, then you'll get material piety. So that's the point is if religion is understood as a support, then it becomes practical. Is then yes, so you'd want to use the best support. You know, it would be just like saying, okay, let us we want to do something. Let's say we want to cook. So then the natural thing would be get the best pans, get the best kitchen arrangement. But if that kitchen arrangement is something that you haven't seen in your house, you know, your house doesn't, your friends haven't, your grandmother didn't, then we'll say, you know, why all this fancy stuff? This is not ours. We're Westerners. We only use, you know, 4 bricks and an old tin can to cook in. You know, it's kind of like, why would you do that? Here's a much more efficient system, especially for people who talk, you know, efficiency, talk professionalism, talk that. That's only found in Varna Ashram, literally. But but at the same time, is as long as one's engaged in the direct activities, those are the most powerful, one will advance. But as long as you're not distracted by the external features of the body and mind, you know, because of lack of proper ingredients and stuff like that. You know, the household thing is not going well, or relationships aren't going well, or financial aren't going well. So if one is distracted by those things, and so one puts an emphasis on that, then, you know, you can then what do you do? Because you won't use Varnashram, so then you have to use modern, and that just entangles you and is more miserable. Right? That's the cause, one of the causes for joining in the first place.
Yes, right?
You know, so why would you do that? Why would you go back to that? You know, that's not that great. You know. So the Vedic is, since you're in the material world, then why not follow the instructions, you know, in the manual for the material world? Since it's meant for going back to Godhead, these are all the facilities that you can use in going back to Godhead. And how do you go back to Godhead? By engaging body, mind, and words in Krishna's service. So then the Shvedas explain. Body can be engaged in this way, mind in this way, senses in this way, you know, the tongue in this way, and stuff like that. You know, so that's what we do. We don't speculate. We take prasad. We chant Hare Krishna. We don't lick the deity or something. You know, it means there's ways to apply. So it's the best system. And so even if you're following all that, someone who can just be the key is the direct activities or the primary activities of pure devotional service. So we see Haridas Thakur, even though he's not following very much of any of these other activities, any other religious processes, then he has the benefit of all of them to their perfectional stage, because he's chanting, he's engaged in the direct activities 24/7.
And he chants Shuddha Nam.
Yes, he chants Shuddha Nam. But the point is even if you're always absorbed, even if it's not Shuddha Nam, that's the best way to get there.
Yes.
You know, there's not some other process, you know, like jumping around in circles on a pogo stick or something. It's not necessarily going to improve your chanting. Right? So, because the point is it's given, is that you chant, even if it's with offense. What's how to correct that? By chanting. You know, so it is the process. It is the goal, right? Because other things, you have a goal, and if there's a mess up, there's something to correct it. But the holy name is also the process. He's also the one you have the relationship with, right? So he is the sambandha. He is the abhideya. He is the prayojana. So the holy name then is that. So he, you know, being the acharya, then he's setting the best example. And so everything else that possibly you could do is being performed there. But if you're worried about other things other than that, then that's what Varnashram is for. That's where it steps in. Right? It means naturally, if it's just a little bit, you know, you need regulation in that because you can't spontaneously keep yourself in the Bhagavat, that's what Pancharatra is for. It'll regulate your life. But if you need a bit more than that, that's what Varnashram's for. Right? And the point is, you can't say, well, what if we need more than that? Is that what the Western culture is for? The Western, who has something? Who has?
No one.
Yeah. I'm saying, you hear about a few people and they're glorified that, oh, he has. But at the same time, it's what does he have? You know, I always thought it was very interesting that, what is it? One of the, you know, big, well-known billionaires is Warren Buffett. Mm-hmm. Right there. He lives in a regular house. You know, nice neighborhood, you know. And, you know, one of the better houses in the neighborhood. But it's an actual regular suburban middle-class neighborhood.
I think it's the first house he bought.
Yeah.
He lives there.
And he still, you know, it's great. It works. Why get a bigger house? You know, you could spend, you know, that money could be invested somewhere else, you know. So the whole point is that these other things, the idea is it'll be better. You know, these guys got these huge, you know, 10,000 square foot houses. They can't use them. They can't.
They're never there.
Huh?
They're never there.
They're never there, yeah. So that's another thing. So. That's the point. Well, you see, Warren Buffett, he's there every day at his house, you know. So the whole principle that, no, there isn't something there, means the whole material world doesn't have something there. The best shot you have is through Varnashram. And even that, it's still temporary. Even if everything works very nicely, like Nulla and Damayanti, they get together, the perfect arrangement, but they both die. It's not that they're alive today and we're just telling how they got together and wasn't that, you know, that was a wild story. They're dead. You know, they're gone. So that's the whole thing. You know, this idea is that no, we'll have a perfect arrangement. Perfect is connected to Krishna. That's the thing. And working with the material world, you use Krishna's system. It's his world. You know, it's like that song, it's Krishna's world. You know, Krishna made the 14 planetary systems. You know, Krishna made the oceans. You know, that song. Yeah. No? Yeah. So that's there. There's no need of speculation. That's why it's so easy. The acharyas just give us what is there. Just use it. Because the point is, we're trying to go back to Godhead. So if you're trying to go back to Godhead, that's where the focus is. You wouldn't focus on other things. You know? And so, you do that by engaging yourself in the Lord's service. Engaging yourself in the Lord's service, that means, you know, what is your particular nature that you have? What is the particular physical and subtle, gross and subtle body, the psychological and the physical nature? So accordingly, then you engage yourself in service. It's not about prestige, it's not about facility, it's not about that. It's just that these things you'll be the most comfortable at. And if you're comfortable, everyone else will be comfortable. And if you're not comfortable, no one's going to be comfortable. So if someone's trying to prove something, someone's trying to get some benefit for something, they're not satisfied, no one's satisfied. Why? Because Krishna's not satisfied. That's why he says, do your own duty. You don't have to do something else. So it's not a, you know, how you say, a competition. It's about how to engage yourself in Krishna's service. And then in being engaged in Krishna's service like that, then you're happy, everyone else is happy. You see these devotees here, it's like we're seeing how they're interacting and how it's all about Lord Chaitanya. You know, we don't get into details of what they do with their life. They have. They're following Varnashram, so they're all doing those things. Like you see, now and again, someone has to go for some service or something like that. But the focus is always on the primary. And the secondary gets as much attention as it warrants to be useful in Krishna's service. So we have to reverse that way of thinking. Rather than, I'll set myself up, then devotional service. No, and if you're not engaged now, you won't be engaged more. Does that make sense? Like you think, oh, I'm not doing so well, but when I get this, then I'll be doing like that. When you get that, you'll find you're still not. You know? That's how companies make money. Because if people were satisfied, why would they get anything else? You know? No?
Yes?
Yeah. So like that.
I heard Prabhupada say today, in the spiritual world, there's no past, there's no future. only the present. If you want to be Krishna conscious, live in the present.
Yes. Yeah. That's the thing. Because it's what's available right now, how can you engage yourself right now? But if we're thinking now what I could do later, you know, so too much emphasis is put on, you know, your 5-year plan, 10-year plan, you know, the whole thing, you know, these big, you know, really big, respectful, they have a 20-year plan and all that. You know, we have an eternal plan. We're going to be serving Krishna eternally. So it's just that you don't get better than that. But you can only do something in the present. That's may not be well understood. You can't do something in the future. You're not there. You can't do something in the past. You're not there. You're here now. So now you can do something. But the point is, and Krishna, he is time. So he's not past, he's not future. He's always present. So this idea of oh no, you can't do these things anymore, but it's coming from Krishna. Material world goes on now just like it always has. Like that. It doesn't change. You know, you have different facilities in different ages, but the nature works the same. Water's wet in Satya Yuga. Water's wet in Treta Yuga. Water's wet and Dwapara is also wet in Kali Yuga. At the end of Kali Yuga, there may be no water, but if there was, it would be wet. You know? So that's the thing, is that it doesn't change. So you can always, wherever you are, at any time, take it and use it. But you have to know time, place, and circumstance where you're at. But that's not, it's not a modern approach. It's Krishna's approach. This idea that, no, you're in the modern, you have to use modern. It's like, it doesn't work for them. If it worked, why are they still looking, improving and changing? You know, they work perfectly fine. You know, the can opener worked perfectly fine. You take the can over, put it in the top, and go like this. It works. Now they take it that it actually clips on this way, and then you do it, and it takes the top off that way. You know? You know, like that. It's okay. Yeah. So it's why do you have to keep making it? It already works. You know? But what to do? That's the mode of passion. Mode of passion is the senses. I could get more from my senses. So Haridas Thakur, then he is just gone to the essence. He chants, he absorbs himself, and so he's therefore then the best of the Aryans, like that. Though socially people may or may not accept him, and he doesn't want to disturb anybody because they don't have the spiritual position to see like that. And so then, you know, he wants some place where he can chant and, you know, see the chakra. And he's good. And so Lord Chaitanya arranged it. You know, he's in a nice garden. You know, it said like that. You know, within the flower garden, they're in a very secluded place. So there's the garden, so it's in the back of that. So it's not like someone can just walk out of the house and it was right there. It'll be a little bit back. And so that way then he can sit there and chant nicely. And whatever goes on then won't bother him. And he's absorbed. But also Prabhupada makes the point is we're not Haridas Thakur. We can't do that. Go and just on our own sit down and chant. We have to engage the senses fully. He's fully engaged just by chanting. So, you know, his mind, his sense, everything's fully engaged. But for us, we're not fully engaged. So, yes, we'll chant, but we'll also do other things to keep us busy. And then in that way, we follow in Haridas Thakur's footsteps that we're trying to 24 hours be engaged like him. That makes one a true Aryan, but we may not do it by just sitting and chanting. No?
The result is the same?
The result is the same. Otherwise, why would he be Acharya? Hmm. He'd be that one-off lucky dude. You know? But no, he's the Acharya. Because what he does, others can follow in the footsteps, not imitate, and get the result. That's the Acharya. He doesn't do something that others can't get benefit from. Like that. So it's always according to Shastra. It's always according to Krishna's pleasure. And he shows it so that we can take part. That's Acharya. Not Acharya means I can do whatever I want. No, they never do that. That's abhidhuts. Like that. Srila Prabhupada. Since he was born in a Muslim family, Srila Haridas Thakur could not enter the temple of Jagannath due to temple restrictions. Nonetheless, he was recognized by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Namacharya Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur, however, considered himself unfit to enter the Jagannath temple. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could have personally taken Haridas into the Jagannath temple if he wished, but the Lord did not like to disturb a popular custom. Consequently, the Lord asked his servant simply to look at the Vishnu wheel on top of the temple and offer obeisances, namaskara. This means that if one is not allowed to enter the temple, or if he thinks himself unfit to enter the temple, he can look at the wheel from outside the temple, and that is as good as seeing the deity within. Right? So, you know, like if you're sick or something and you can't go to the temple, then you see the chakra and you're good.
Right. Is that the only purpose for putting a chakra on top of a dome of deities?
Is it the only?
People can have darshan, or it's just
darshan. You know that that's a Vishnu temple. Yes. He protects the temple, like that. And, you know, he wants to do some service, so that's where he sits, like that. So all those, because otherwise, depending on what's on the top of the temple, you know what temple it is.
Yes.
So chakra then means it's Vishnu.
Yeah.
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu promised to come daily to see Srila Haridas Thakur, and this indicates that Srila Haridas Thakur was so advanced in spiritual life that, although considered unfit to enter the temple, he was being personally visited by the Lord every day, right? So he can't go in the temple, the Lord will come out to see him. That's really far out, huh? Nor was there any need for his going outside his residence to collect food. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assured Haridas Thakur that the remnants of his food would be sent there. As the Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita 9:22, Yoga Kshema Vaham Yaham, I arrange all life's necessities for my devotees. So if you're absorbed in service, then that will be there. We could say, oh, but you're a family person, you have to, you know, do some occupation. But who gave the concept you have to do an occupation? Right? Krishna's living in his family, he's doing an occupation. Right? You know, in Vrindavan, he's herding the cows. In Dwarka, he's going to the Sabha and doing his duties as a Kshatriya. You know, in Mayapur, then he's teaching his classes. So, having an occupation, that's part. But you're performing an occupation because that's Krishna's arrangement. Not that, oh, we have to be practical. We can't get it. You know, all this is very nice and that, but I practice. I got to get a job. But who said you got to get a job? Krishna said. Why is it universally accepted that you do work, you get paid? Where does that come from? Who created that? You know, which civilization started that? None of them. Which started marriage? None of them. Which started the idea of, you know, parents and children and that? None of them. Who started the idea that there's a leader of the community or society or that and they organize things? Nobody. Krishna did. So everything that we take is just normal. It's all established by Krishna. But when we do it, we lay claim to it. So because we say it's ours, then it's something different. Right? You know, Niagara Falls was always there. Then somebody, the Indians knew it was there. But then when the, you know, the white man from, Europe shows up, now it's been discovered and now it gets their name. Even though it has a name, the Indians gave it a name a long time ago. You know? So like that, you know, everything goes that way. You know, how you say, Newton, was it Newton and gravity?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's like, it wasn't there before? Yeah, it was a really weird thing. Everybody was floating around in that until Newton came up with the theory. Then, boom, everything hit the ground, and now everything could go on. You know, everyone got traction, they could get things done. Before that, it was really hard to get anything done, you know? That's why it took so long to take Gaul, you know, by the Romans, you know, because they're all floating around, and that every now and again they pass close enough that they could whack each other with their spears and stuff, and then they float off again. You know, so it wasn't until Newton that, you know, things really got it together. You know, so that's the disease of the conditioned living entity. He thinks, because I did it, it's mine. But the Vaishnavas think is it's Krishna's, and I can render service, so therefore I engage his activities in Krishna's service. That it's that simple. That's what Varnashram is. Otherwise, you get bewildered by this and who's who and this, and am I going to like who I am, and is someone else going to be superior to me, and, you know, like this. No, it's just, you just engage yourself in Krishna's service according to your nature. That's all. You know, in which ashram and which varna. Like that. For Vaishnavas, you don't have to designate the varna, because Vaishnavas are all Brahmins by ashram, by consciousness. But as far as varna goes, that you can only do. See, it's a spiritual, anybody can do from any position. That's why example is given of the chandala. Even he can do. But when it comes to varna, you can only do those things that your body and mind have the skill for. That's all. You know, you can't work outside of that. You know, because you're a devotee, now you can do it. No, it's the same. It's no different than before. Like that. So you're advancing spiritually through the ashrams. And varna, it's the same nature. You engage that in the Lord's service. And it doesn't matter. It's just like, is Sanjaya respected? Right? He spoke Bhagavad Gita, right? He's you know, from Vyasadeva, he learned the art of how you can see, you know, with the television of the mind and the heart, he can see what's going on at a distant place. Right? Dhritarashtra is the emperor. Can he do that? No. Sanjaya, he's a Shudra, he's his servant. He can do that. So he's respected. Dhritarashtra listens to Sanjaya. You know, Dhritarashtra listens to Vidura, as long as it's not about his son. You know, he's a Shudra. So that's the thing, is that we take the mood of the caste, you know, Brahmins, that everybody's fixed and this and that and all these kind of things. When actually, no, it's what you're qualified for. That's what you can do. You know? So that's, but you have to actually be qualified. It's not just enough, well, I'd like to do that. No, that's means you're inspired, of course. If you do things you like to do, you're inspired. But inspiration's not enough. Right? I think, was it? Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada used that phrase, first deserve, then desire. Yeah, but here now it's just this desire and that's it. That's the key. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, it doesn't work. You can do it, but you'll see it'll fail. But at the same time, everything goes on. Why? Because Krishna is so kind. Right? If it was up to us, our abilities, it might not be going on so good. But because Krishna takes care, as we said, yoga kshema vaham yaham, then everything works out. Even though we're doing all kinds. It's just like the kids. They're being crazy. They're doing the homework. They still get fed. You know, they still have a place to sleep. Everything works out for them. But if they do, you know, if they do things properly, then things move forward much quicker.
You actually never hear, I mean, personally, of devotees in our worldwide Vaishnava community who are poverty stricken.
No.
You never hear.
It won't happen. Krishna is taking care. Some might have a better situation, some may this, but even that better is pretty relative, you know, to social standards and norms and all that, you know. So if you're working within them, yes, you follow those. But at the same time, you can't identify with them. As soon as you identify with them, it's an upadi, it's a material thing, you know. So therefore, instead of saying we're Westerners and so we should do this, that's an upadi. Why not just say, I haven't had I don't have the background or experiences or the impressions or samskaras to do some of these things. So what can I do? You know. So look for that. What could I do? So one, you can definitely all the spiritual things, and then from there you see what you can do and add on. You stick to the principles, and then from there you add the details. But here it's no, I can't do this detail, so I'll do this detail. But in both cases, the principle is lost. Oh, we can't, you know, do this activity, so we'll do that. But the actual purpose of that activity, we're not getting. And we don't understand the purpose of this activity. So it's a real social weakness. But the point is we don't know means we're unqualified. So why are we so worried about prestige? Who's judging? You know, amongst the devotees, who's judging? Right? No one's judging. But we're judging ourselves against what the karmis might think. But where do the karmis have anything to do with us? right? Where are they?
You don't need to impress them.
No, why? The point is why try to impress people that you can't impress? And even if you could impress them, they'd be so jealous they'd want to destroy you. So, you know, why work in these circles? You know? It's just you perform your duties, and then whatever comes, that's what it is. But I want a particular result. So in the Vedas, I just do my duties. But in the modern, I can go out, and, you know, it's a free world. Everybody can do anything and become anything and all that. It's kind of like, they've been saying that for a long time now. And where is it? Where is it? You know? Maya is so clever. It just very slowly covers everybody so they don't understand what's going on.
They forget.
Yeah, they forget. They forget. And then in their new position, then they can be tossed or whatever, and they think I'm doing something prestigious, but at the same time, it's... No. You know? So that's the thing, is we deal from the spiritual world, that's what the place is for, and people can't complain like that. So it's time immemorial, there's always been religious people. There's always been people trying for, you know, elevation of the consciousness and the soul. So why we're thinking, oh, we're so different? No, it's exactly the same. I mean, well, just even here, it's fun. Why was America started? It was discovered because they were looking for money and this and that. But why was it settled by the Europeans? Who went over there? Right? One or two guys went for money. What was the majority of people that went over in the boats?
Freedom.
Religious freedom. That's all. You know? And then, you know, they came and they settled, and if no one bothered them, they were happy. And then the next group, when they came, if they could find a place there, like the Mormons, they came, settled on the East Coast. They got harassed like anything. They packed up their bags and went as far away as possible.
Utah.
Yeah, it means like it's out in the middle of nowhere, you know? And so, you know, who goes to Utah? So it's their place, you know?
Yeah, actually it's the whole Protestant movement that moved to America.
Yeah, so that's the whole point, is with religious freedom. And so therefore, why would you say we're Americans, we can't do this religious stuff? It's kind of like, what? You know, that's like saying, oh, we're Africans, we can't jump. It's kind of like, what are you talking about? You know, you want to play basketball? No, I'm African, I can't jump. It's kind of like, what do you mean? So it makes no sense. So just somebody has some kind of false prestige that they're looking at, and generally, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they generally talk about it's the middle class that has this anxiety.
Yeah.
The rich and the poor, they know more who they are. But the middle class, because there it's always called the emerging middle class. You know, the term's used now. The same term was used at the time of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the emerging middle class. Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions the same thing, the emerging middle class. And what was going on at Caesar's time, the emerging middle class. It's always, because you have rich and poor, and then when there's peace, the middle class comes up, like that. And then when there's war, it disappears. Right? When there's unrest, it disappears. You know, like where's the middle class in you know, some of these places where wars are going on? There's rich people and there's the guys out on the street. They maybe used to be something, but they're one or the other. So then and there they get too bewildered by the opportunity that they could become better situated, better educated, better situated socially. You know, the upwardly mobile, you know, like that. So point is if you're upwardly mobile, that means you weren't rich in the first place. So amongst them, you're still not going to have any status. Mm-hmm. So it's amongst the middle class who do a little better, they're the ones who pat each other on the back. But other established things, they couldn't care less for them. You know, those things are there, they're not going away. You know, yes.
Interesting thing we see in temples. Somebody who's like very poor, he joined, he stay, he's impressed because devotees don't judge him on his like external thing. The rich people come to temple because here is where they are not harassed because they are they are rich and like people are not after them.
Yeah.
So the rich and the poor,
they're comfortable.
They're comfortable.
Yeah, because they both tend to be religious. The poor are religious because they want to, you know, just survive, and the rich are religious because they know that's the only way you stay rich. I mean, actual, you know, how you say, traditionally rich families, they know this. They're all generally quite religious. They know without giving in charity, all this, they won't stay rich. Yeah, like that. So these atheistic rich people, they you know, you go back in time, they weren't rich.
After 10, 20 years, they are not rich anymore.
Yeah, that's another thing. Or even overnight sometimes, you know, it's like...
All the filthy rich in China, they're all Buddhists.
They're all Buddhists.
I mean, then they give so much money to the Buddhist masters in Tibet.
Yeah.
I mean, just to clean, you know, all the dirty money.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it's
first
just...
they make a lot of money.
Right.
Like heavy karma yoga, ugra karma.
Yeah.
And then they become Buddhists.
Ugra yoga.
Ugra yoga.
Then they become Buddhists. Yeah, because otherwise how do you maintain?
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. That's nature. Is artha comes from dharma. So Prabhupada mentions, but if you're getting artha and you don't see the dharma, then people think you don't, they don't understand it's coming from last life. And so I have the money, so what do I need to do dharma? Dharma maintains it. So that's the problem, is people don't know how to maintain. Everyone talks sustainability. You know, but if you understood where it comes from, why wouldn't there be sustainability? Remember, I think it was, I'm not sure if it was at the manor, it was talked about at the manor, or it was some other place, some other house. Someone came in and arranged, and they were talking to them about the house. You know, it was one of these old, you know, 100 or 200 year old houses, you know, wooden, like, you know, I think like these Tudor houses, you know, it's all wooden frames, big, you know, like that. And someone said, but, you know, what about the maintenance and all that? You know, if you have to fix this, you know, nowadays, that'll be so ridiculous, you know, like that. How do you do like that? He said, come. And he put him over to the windows and pointed out in the back. See that line of trees there? He says, those are planted at the same time they built the house. So when you need a new beam, there's the thing. And if you cut one of those, you plant a new one. So before they would think of these things. Nowadays, no one. It's just a matter of this, just immediate, and then it falls apart. No one thinks about it. So that's the thing, is there's no concept of these things. And so that's the point of the Vedas. That's where sustainability is. That's where, what do you call it? What's that other fancy term they use? Succession is. You know, that's where, because the point is you do this till you're 50, then you naturally turn it over to someone else, right? Because the point is, succession is supposed to happen at 50, not at 80, right? So that's the whole thing. That means you're working at this, and because you're working with people and developing, then there's already people there. And after 25 years, you should have had people that you can step out and they can do. That's the sign of good management, is you can... You don't have to run all the things. Elephants going by. You just see these floating heads. Because, you know, before you could see the elephant, but now the wall's high enough, you just see that Mahout's head just going by. And it's just, you know, smoothly going. You're like, okay. Yeah, you see him that way. So all these things are there. You know, it's just like, you're giving in charity, you know, you're keeping for emergencies and things like that. So those are all written into the Shastra. You know, it's like you have household money, whatever it is that this is what you're running off of, but you have to still keep some of that for emergencies. That's other than big emergencies. We're talking about little ones. You know, and so who does what, everything like that, it's all there. You know? And so then... wherever there's an aberration, that's because it's not following what the Vedas say. People point out a weakness in the Vedic system and say, see, this is going wrong. But are there no weaknesses in the modern? You know, it's completely perfect and India's got all the flaws. You know? So that's the whole point, is you follow something properly, it works. You don't follow, it won't work. So that's the point. So here's then we see is Haridas Thakur, because he's doing everything connected to Krishna and always absorbed in Krishna. And then Krishna is so, affectionate towards that. Then he arranges everything for him. Like that's a yogic shema vahamyaham. That was the whole point we got into that was, is that you worry about performing your duties, Krishna will worry about the results. If we worry about the results, then, you know, we're trying to get nice results for Krishna. But the point is what we'll have, and that's Krishna will take care. Like that. And so, yeah, and if you're attached to Krishna and not attached to anything, you know, what's your facilities, then things can go nicely. Like that. A reference is made here for those who are very anxious to imitate the behavior of Thakur Haridas in an unnatural way. It means you don't have the character for it. One must receive the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his representative before adopting such a way of life. The duty of a pure devotee or servant of the Lord is to carry out the order of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Nityananda Prabhu to go to Bengal and preach. And he asked the Goswamis, Rupa and Sanatan, to go to Vrindavan and excavate the lost holy places of pilgrimage. In this case, the Lord asked Haridas Thakur to remain there at Jagannath Puri and constantly chant the holy names of the Lord. Thus, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave different persons different orders, and consequently, one should not try to imitate the behavior of Haridas Thakur without being ordered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or his representative. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur condemns such imitations in this way. Dushtaman, Tumi Kishir Vaishnav. Pratishtara Tare, Nirjanera Gare, Tava Hari Nama Kevala Kaitava. My dear mind, you are trying to imitate Haridas Thakur and chant the Hare Krishna mantra in a secluded place. But you are not worth being called a Vaishnava because what you want is cheap popularity and not the actual qualifications of Haridas Thakur. If you try to imitate him, you will fall down, for your neophyte position will cause you to think of women and money. Thus you will fall into the clutches of Maya, and your so-called chant in a secluded place will bring about your downfall. So it's there. So you see is that you do absorb yourself in Krishna, Krishna takes care. He takes care of Haridas Thakur, he took care of Nityananda Prabhu, he takes care of the Goswamis. Everybody's taking care. And like you said, there's no one that has any problem. Like that. There's a perceived problem that becomes from middle class conditioning. Is that you think it could be better. Well, if it's just relations are nice, everything's going on, you're good. 2.11.196 When Nityananda Prabhu, Jagannanda Prabhu, Damodar Prabhu, and Mukunda Prabhu met Haridas Thakur, they all became very pleased. Verses 197 to 211. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributes prasadam to his devotees. Numbers. Yeah. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu returned to the residence, his residence, after taking a bath in the sea, all the devotees headed by Advaita Prabhu went to bathe in the sea. After bathing in the sea, Advaita Prabhu and all the other devotees returned. And on their return, they saw the top of the Jagannath temple. Right. So it's interesting. When you bathe once in the sea, then you get all the salty things, you feel itchy and all that. So generally you see at beaches for people who just come down and take bath, they have a shower. But if you always take bath in the ocean, that stops. It's only there for a couple of, a few baths like that. And then the skin adjusts and then it doesn't have that effect anymore. You know, the seawater kills all the bacteria and all that. It's good for the skin, you know. You know, it's like they have all these bath salts, you know, and you get the Dead Sea salts, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, there it is.
Yes. Also, they don't sweat more.
You don't sweat more.
Generally, they'll get a lot of sweat and then they'll take part.
The sea, yeah. So you just adjust a little bit.
Unless you're a regular floater of the Dead Sea.
Yeah, well, if you have that opportunity, then...
I mean, water is oily, you know.
Oily?
Oh, yeah. Water is so oily because it's 45% salt.
No.
No, you float.
Yeah, yeah. No, you float, definitely.
The radiation took you there?
No, he didn't. But I went there in 69. But then it was different. There was just one little place there.
Sure.
Now I think it's very developed into kind of resort and everything.
So you get in the water, and then it's like you're going to sit on the chair and just let go. So you float. You can really go.
Yes.
And the water is so oily because there's so much salt. When you come out, you've got this heavy water pressure shower. You've got to get rid of that salt.
Mm.
And if you have a tiny little, you know, cut.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, the seawater is not that salty, you know, because there it's that it just sits there. I mean, it's just like, see, is that when Agastya drank the ocean, and so then, you know, to get at the, I forget who they were, not the Nivatakaviches, they were another group. They were harassing the demigods, and they were staying on the ocean, so no one could defeat them. So then it was worked out, Agastya will drink the water and that of the ocean, and then then they can get rid of these demons. But, you know, he's got such a good digestion that after they got rid of the demons, he says, okay, now can you put the water back? And they said, I've already digested it. You know, what are you talking about? You know, so then there was no water. So then that was when then we see Bhagirath, and then he brought the Ganga down, and the Ganga filled. That's why bathing in the ocean is also considered holy. One, the holy rivers all go there, but the actual ocean that's filled up now, that's from Ganga water.
Mm.
Like that. So she fills, and then from there she goes down. So then it's maintained. And then in that, they had just built regular palaces and this and that, and they were killed, and that's all. But you have a similar situation where then the water was coming, but that area there, then because of the people, they were also not well behaved, but somehow or another everything was turned into salt. Then when the water comes down, then it has too much salt in the water there. No?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why there maybe you have to take a bath. But the other is, if you're only going in once in that or something, you would definitely take a bath. But if you're going to be there and taking a bath every day in the ocean, you don't need to.
Which is what Lord Chaitanya did.
Yes. Like that, all the devotees. I remember staying, we were there for something. I was there, can't remember, for some time. And there was, was staying at some mat on the beach and that. And so I was taking a bath there every day. And I noticed after a couple of times, and any of the uncomfortableness that's there from that first time, it goes away. And then it's just like a regular bath. Okay. No?
Yeah.
Okay. So in other words, technically you're washing off the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah, it's just down the road.
Yeah, and from, what do you call it? You know, the ocean, then you're being purified. Right there. They then went to the residence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to take their luncheon. One after the other, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu made all the devotees sit in their proper places. He then began to distribute prasadam with his own transcendental hand. All the devotees were served prasadam on plantain leaves. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed on each leaf a quantity suitable for two or three men to eat. For his hand could not distribute less than that. Yeah. But it's just, he just wanted to feed. It's like, you know, how much food does a mother put on the kid's plate? You know? So it's the same kind of thing. Other devotees kept their hands raised over the prasadam distributed to them, for they did not want to eat without seeing the Lord eat first. Srub Damodar Goswami then informed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, unless you sit and take prasadam, no one will accept it. Gopinath Acharya has invited all the sannyasis who remain with you to come and take prasadam. Gopinath Acharya has already come, bringing sufficient remnants of food to distribute to all the sannyasis. And sannyasis like Paramanandapuri and Brahmanandapuri are waiting for you. You may sit down and accept the luncheon with Nityananda Prabhu, and I shall distribute the prasadam to all the Vaishnavas. Okay, Swarup Damodar said that. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu carefully delivered some prasadam into the hands of Govinda to be given to Haridas Thakur. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally sat down to accept lunch with the other sannyasis, and Gopinath Acharya began to distribute the prasadam with great pleasure. Then Swarup Damodar Goswami, Damodar Pandit, and Jagadananda all began to distribute prasadam to the devotees with great pleasure. They ate all kinds of cakes and sweet rice, filling themselves up to their throats, and at intervals they vibrated the holy name of the Lord in great jubilation. After everyone had finished his lunch and washed his mouth and hands, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally decorated everyone with flower garlands and sandalwood pulp. After thus accepting prasadam, they all went to take rest at their respective residences, and in the evening they again came to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So you see is that distributing prasad is a great festival, and people like to do and all that, and you know, you have that personal interaction and everything like that. So that's the, you know, that, I mean, it's the Vedic tradition, and especially the Gaudiyas, they put a lot into all these things like that. And so that's the advantage. The modern things then, you know, here, who's distributing? Lord Chaitanya's distributing, Gopinath Acharya, Swarup Damodar, then who else? Damodar Pandit, Jagadananda, very senior men. So tradition is the senior people distribute prasad. But somehow or another, from the, you know, we're Westerners, Prabhu aspect, then it always has to be who's the most junior and most unqualified and can't do anything else. And it's because they don't know how to serve prasad. It doesn't make for a nice experience. They're not necessarily distributing, you know, in great pleasure. You know, they would rather sit down and eat, or worried that everyone's going to eat everything else or pick out all the paneer, you know. Or they're super enthusiastic but have no idea how to serve, and so they do a bad job. And so therefore then you end up with, you know, a bunch of buckets and some spoons sticking out, and then you take what you want. And then you feel, yes, I'll take exactly what I want. But the Vedic way of serving is you get just what you want, how much you want. So, you know, things get lost. Because one doesn't understand how it works. There's always the thing is that either you're doing it because of the mercy, but you have no idea how, and you're not about to learn because, you know, either too new to understand that or too senior to bother with such trivial details like that. So then you have, it ends up as a big mess.
I remember when Bhakti Chaitanya was known as Gandhishyam, and he had this reputation of serving prasadam to the devotees.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember he came once to New Mayapur, and we heard Ganeshyam is serving breakfast, and the devotees just turned up so they could get prasadam from his hand.
Wow, nice. Yeah, no, it's nice.
What do you mean he's serving? He's serving breakfast.
Yeah, no, because it's that. It's an experience. That's the thing. It's a cultural experience. You know how to do it. It's a cultural experience. And if you don't know how to do it, then it's an institution, you know, and like a school or something, you know, like that, you know. And school lunches are famous for being not that great.
But at the Gaudiya Math, we still have that tradition that sannyasis serve prasadam.
Yeah, no, it's standard because it's the Gaudiya system, like that. And I always remember when we used to go next door to Damodar Maharaj's for his Vyas Puja, he'd always be serving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd be serving the main group of devotees, and other devotees would take care of other things. But the standard was only second initiated devotees could serve prasad. First initiated, uninitiated couldn't serve prasad. It had to be served by second initiated devotees. And then if you had other senior men, they might, you know, oversee or do this and that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we used to serve the GBC here, prasad? It'll be over Sunday to Chanmars. He was the temple president, you know. And he's not just a temple president. He's running a temple with 200 devotees. You know, who else has a temple like that? And he'd always sit there and oversee the service like that. And then those who are qualified, then they would assist. So that's the standard. And then you have, that's an experience. like that. But otherwise, it's thought that, oh, it's you know, it's a low class thing because you're serving. But the whole point is jivas are servants. It's actually our position. So that's the thing, is we shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, in the name of prestige, we end up with nothing. Like that. You know, culturally nothing. Though worrying about our cultural position. Yeah, you don't have, everybody's equal. You know, down somewhere, or maybe it was over there. Yeah. So that's the thing, is that all these things are there. They're wonderful. They're given by Lord Chaitanya. They're carried down by the acharyas, who the Prabhupada's given them to us, and then we can take advantage or not. You know.
Well, you say taking advantage or not, but it doesn't seem that there is an option, because if you don't take advantage, the future generations are going to turn this around and make a mess of the whole tradition.
Why are you talking future generations? I've watched the present generations do it very nicely over the last 20 years. What do you mean? Like, I remember going to England, and, you know, in the, what was that, maybe in the 90s, and people could serve. But when I was there last, ate in somebody's house, I don't know what it was, 5 years or something ago, nobody had any idea how to serve. Nobody. If you go to those really rich families, there's two or three of them that are there, they still know how to serve. Because it's culture. They don't lose their tradition. You know, that common people may change, but they don't. But, yeah. You know, it's just thought, there's more important things to do. You know, we don't do things around the house. You know, everybody's the professional. Everyone's the career person. And so then there's no culture. And that's the point, is they all have no culture. One has to remember the professionals, the ones that are career people, those that in the Vedic, that's called Kayastha. And a Kayastha is a Shudra. Ramananda Rai was a Kayastha. I mean, look at his position, prestigious and all that, but socially he's a Shudra. So suddenly now we've elevated the Shudra as the top of society.
Out of all like grihastha's homes, I went for prasad. The most like thing which I remember is one of the districts around here. It's a hut. They have nothing inside the home. Like if three of us sit inside their home, it's filled. The quality of their service.
Yeah, quality of the service. Previously, I remember in the 70s, whatever house you went into, it didn't matter how poor they were, how rich they were, in the village or in the city, the quality of service and attitude was exactly the same. The culture was exactly the same. So that was the thing. That's community. Everyone knows how to serve. Nowadays, no one knows how to serve. You know, so dadati pratigrinati guhyamakadi pichati bhunkte bojayate chaiva. So bhunkte bojayate, that one's out. You know, then the giving gifts and accepting gifts, oh, we don't do that unless it's authorized by, you know, who's in control of this and that, the president of this, that, the jivasanya, you know, no, like that. So that one's out. And of course, you can't keep anything a secret because everybody has the right to know everything because gossip is supreme. So, you know, okay, you know, okay, get rid of those three, we'll have to try something else. You know, oh, everybody's be nice and everybody love each other and like that, we'll try that one. But didn't they already try that back in the 60s and it didn't work? No? Something fell.
Yeah, it's not
much. Oh, okay.
I like those photos of the veranda in the Lotus building when Prabhupada had his godbrothers.
Yeah.
And they take prasada.
Yeah.
I love watching how the service is done in those photos.
Yeah. Yeah, because those Nittai Chand Maharaj would have overseen the prasad. Yeah, no, it's very nice. It was a very, it has a whole cultures there, and the whole, because people can relax and this. But now people want to be able to talk their talk and walk their walk while they eat. And so that, but that's not what it's for. You're supposed to relax. You're supposed to let go. You have to have an identity. If that's your only identity, then it's sad. You know. Being devotees, you know, serving these direct act, because taking prasad is a direct activity of devotional service. It's not an indirect like management. So why would you ruin prasad, which is direct, with an indirect? You know, it's just like, you know, when you're chanting, then you try not to do other things. Or when you're worshiping the deity, you know, it's not like he's doing the artik and he's on the phone at the same time, you know. Stuff like that. You know, so like that, why would you do that with prasad? So, what to do? But the beauty is that it's Lord Chaitanya's movement, so, you know, even a spark can start a fire. So here is that they all had prasad nicely, it was all served nicely, everybody was very happy. Then they went and washed their hands and mouth, they went back to their residences, took some rest, you know, did whatever they have to do. Afternoon is like when you do take care of your ordinary kind of things. Like that, you know, because morning's more sadhana, then earlier after that's the more occupational, then the evening, that's when you do all your little this and that.
So does that mean that the devotees were served only Jagannath Mahaprasadam every day?
Yes.
Or something else was cooked for them?
No. Jagannath doesn't matter how... In Puri as it is today, you have a festival or anything, it's always Jagannath Prasad. Every wedding, it's only Jagannath Prasad. There's nothing else. Like that. So they can supply unlimited prasad. They don't have any problem with that. Because you have all these pandas and all these connections. So here, they have Kashi Mishra and that. They're all the ones that are inside the temple. So they can arrange unlimited prasad. Yes?
It is said that at a time, still now they have that facility, at a time they can cook somewhere around lakh people or something.
Yeah.
They may or may not be cooking now.
But if they know something's like it's wedding season and all that, and 10 weddings are going on, then you know that's 10,000 people right there. You know, so there's no problem for them. So yeah, everyone would just take Jagannath Prasad. Yeah. So it all come in all the pots and all that kind of stuff, you know, the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah, so they didn't have those big aluminum tiffins and stuff like that.
No. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, because it means Jagannath, like it says, Krishna takes care. So he's made this perfect arrangement. Verses 212 to 243. Lord Chaitanya arranges the Samkirtan groups.
One more detail. Currently, one guy who's bodybuilder who's called Mr. India.
Mr. India. Okay.
He's the one who carries Lord Jagannath's pot, Mahaprasadam.
Yeah.
And he built his body just on that, and he's like the top bodybuilder in India. I think last year or last year.
I mean, the guy who just carries Jagannath Prasad on his shoulder, the pots.
Yes.
He's so strong that he went in for the.
And he won it.
Mr. India or something.
Okay.
Weightlifting?
No. The bodybuilder, like Arnold
Schwarzenegger. You know, bodybuilding, because all he does is carry the big pots into Jagannath. That's all. That's a service. And so after so many years of that, then, you know, probably someone said, hey, you could, you know, so he went there, and then he won.
So all these guys say vegetarians cannot be there. He ate only Mahaprasad, and he only carried Mahaprasad.
Vegetarian, only Jagannath Prasadam, like that. Then you see all these big guys going to Puri eating.
He became very famous on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. That's far out. At this time, Ramananda Rai also came to meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the Lord took the opportunity to introduce him to all the Vaishnavas. The great personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then took all of them to the temple of Jagannath and began the congregational chanting of the holy name there. After seeing the dupe artik of the Lord, they all began congregational chanting. Then the Padicha, the superintendent of the temple, came and offered flower garlands and sandalwood pulp to everyone. Four parties were then distributed in four directions to perform Sankirtana.
And in the middle of them, the Lord himself, known as the son of Mother Sachi, began to dance. In the four groups were 8 mridangas and 32 cymbals. Right, so whatever, 1 mridanga, 4 kartals. Altogether, they would begin to vibrate the transcendental sound, and everyone said, "Very good, very good." When the tumultuous vibration of Sankirtan resounded, all good fortune immediately awakened. And the sound penetrated the whole universe through the 14 planetary systems, right? Because sound goes up. That's the thing about sound. It always goes up. And transcendental sound just keeps going up. So then it will just keep going through the whole universe. So when it says that the kirtan vibrated through the, reverberated through the whole universe, it did. You know, like that. We hear it for a certain amount of time, but it just keeps going. I think somebody did a study on this, and they found that, you know, some scientists and all that, that of the different languages, when you speak, they go to different heights, and Sanskrit would go the highest. But that's, they were just doing mundane. But then if you do a transcendental sound, then that will.
They do with the music, the traditional, some particular rag and all.
Here, Lord Chaitanya, yes, they would. Because it's Narottam Das Thakur introduced the kind of music that we use now. Because otherwise, it would be classical music. But, you know, it would be within 16 beats for this. So it would be, you know, so, you know, you have the, you know, 4, 8, 16, you know, or 6, 12, you know, like this, or these different, you know, groupings. And then like this, they would do kirtan.
I'm saying there are more experiments performed.
Oh, there are more.
Yeah, with this classical music, each raga and having
different. How they go? Okay. Very good. When the congregational chanting began, ecstatic love immediately overflowed everything, and all the residents of Jagannath Puri came running. Everyone is astonished to see such a performance of Sankirtana, and they all agree that they never before had kirtan been so performed in ecstatic love of Krishna so exhibited. Right? Because before, Maharaj Prataparudra mentioned that devotees come from all over India and they would do kirtan, but he's never seen kirtan like the Gaudiyas are doing, like that. So here, even the residents, because they live in Puri, so they're hearing lots of kirtan, but then they're saying this they've never seen before. You know, because it's overflowing with ecstatic love for Krishna, like that. Others will be, you know, done, you know, religious. They might have some devotion, you know, like that, or a little bit more, but being done in pure devotion, that they've never seen.
The king will have best of the world, best kirtan years to perform.
Yes, yes.
Still he is considering this.
Yes, 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 yes. At this time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu circumambulated the temple of Jagannath and continuously danced around the whole area. Right? Because they have that huge road that goes around on four sides. So they start at the front, start the kirtan, and then like that they can just go around. And that way you don't have to worry about space. You know? As the circumambulation was performed, the four kirtan parties sang in front and in the rear. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fell down to the ground, Sri Nityananda Rai Prabhu lifted him up. While kirtan was going on, there was a transformation of ecstatic love and much tears, jubilation, trembling, perspiration, and deep resounding in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Upon seeing this transformation, all the people present became very much astonished. The tears from the eyes of the Lord came out with great force, like water from a syringe. Indeed, all the people who surrounded him were moistened by his tears. After circumambulating the temple, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for some time remained at the rear of the temple and continued his Sankirtana. On all four sides, the four Sankirtan parties chanted very loudly, and in the middle, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu danced, jumping high. Right, so you have this thing is here, you had to have one kirtan party. And that, you know, while people are too far away to take part in this and that, you had a group and how many people would be there, and then you'd have another group and another group, and they'd all be doing kirtan. So they're big enough that they don't bother each other, but at the same time as you can take part in one of them. So it's just, it's a very nice system.
You know, it gives more life. Then everybody has to be doing one kirtan like that. You know, especially when you have these big parikrams and you're stretched out for a kilometer, then one kirtan just doesn't work. You know. After dancing for a long time, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became still and ordered four great personalities to begin to dance. In one group, Nityananda Prabhu began to dance. In another group, Advaita Acharya began to dance. Vakreshwara Panda began to dance in another group. And in yet another group, Shivas Thakur began to dance. Because here, before I mentioned, you just had the eight mridangas and 32 kartals. But then you also have a lead dancer. So, with the mridangas, there's eight mridangas, but one of them leads. Everybody follows that. Kartals, one will lead, everyone will follow. And here now, the dancer. You know, one will lead, everybody else will follow. Like that.
You mean there is one dancer, but others will dance also?
Others will dance, but he's specifically, you know, setting the mood and inspiring others and all that. And so that, because of their dancing, everybody else is inspired.
I always thought there was one dancer in the middle, everybody watching.
Yeah.
He's the center in the group.
Yeah, he's the center.
He moves out, he comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that, and inspires others and everything like that. Yeah. You know, it'd be like, you know, Indudunumar is going around getting everyone to dance and like that. While this dancing was going on, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu watched them and performed the miracle. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stood in the middle of the dancers, and all the dancers in all directions perceived that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was looking at them. Wanting to see the dancing of the four great personalities, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited this miracle of seeing everybody simultaneously. Everyone who saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could understand that he was performing a miracle, but they did not know how it was that he could see on all four sides. In his own pastimes to Vrindavan, when Krishna used to eat on the bank of the Jamuna and sit in the center of his friends, every one of the cowherd boys would perceive that Krishna was looking at him. And they're sitting in circles, concentric circles. Each boy thought Krishna was looking at him. Like that. And also that he was sitting in front of them. When somebody came nearby while dancing, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would tightly embrace him. Upon seeing the great dancing, great love, and great Samkirtana, all the people of Jagannath Puri floated in an ecstatic ocean of love. Hearing the greatness of the Sankirtana, King Prataparudra went up to the top of his palace and watched the performance with his personal associates. The king was very much astonished to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's kirtan, and the king's anxiety to meet him increased unlimitedly. After the Sankirtan ended, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu watched the offering of flowers to the Lord Jagannath deity. Then he and all the Vaishnavas returned to his residence. The superintendent of the temple then brought large quantities of prasadam, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally distributed to all the devotees. Finally, they all departed to rest in bed? What's this in slash bed?
I think the slash came printing.
They departed to rest in, or also bed. Okay. Rest in bed. Okay. In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the son of Satchimata, performed his pastimes. As long as the devotees remained in Jagannath Puri with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the pastime of Sankirtan was performed with great jubilation every day. In this way, I've explained the Lord's pastime of Sankirtana, and I bless everyone with this benediction. By listening to this description, one will surely become a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Janita. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rup and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps. Yeah. So, chanting, dancing, taking prasad. Prabhupada said, that's our movement, that's our business. You know, and everything else is just so chanting, dancing, and taking prasad can go on. That's what it's for. You need to organize things, you need to have cooking, you need to have, how you say, the preaching, all these different things are going on so that one can chant, dance, and take prasad.
Now there's chance, dance, take prasad, and get online.
Yeah. In his chapter summary of Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Antyakanda, chapter 5, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati writes, on hearing that Mahaprabhu had returned to Neelachal, King Pretaparudra came to Puri from his capital of Cuttack and displayed intense eagerness to see the Lord as he made special requests to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and other devotees to arrange for him to meet the Lord. When the devotees saw the king's intense eagerness, they advised him to watch the Lord's dancing from a hidden place. But when the king saw saliva frothing from the Lord's mouth, dust on the Lord's body, and other symptoms Mahaprabhu displayed while dancing in transcendental madness, he was unable to understand Mahaprabhu's transcendental ecstatic transformation. And after falling asleep with a doubtful mind, he saw in a dream that the body of Sri Jagannath was also covered with saliva and dust. When the king tried to touch Sri Jagannath in the dream, Jagannath cautioned him by saying, "Your bodily limbs, adorned with sandalwood pulp mixed with musk, are never fit to touch my body covered with saliva and dust." At that moment, King Pretaparudra saw Sri Chaitanya Dev sitting in the same place where Jagannath had been sitting, and his body covered in the same way with saliva and dust. As the king attempted to touch him, Sri Gaurahari said to Pretaparudra, "Since you have aversion for me in your mind, why do you want to touch me?" As the king woke up, he became extremely repentant and realized that Sri Gaurasundara was non-different from Sri Jagannath. Because these things have been told in Chaitanya Bhagavat, so he only tells other aspects.
Yeah.
One day, as Mahaprabhu was sitting in a flower garden with his associates, King Pretaparudra came and offered obeisances to the Lord by falling flat like an uprooted banana tree, and symptoms of ecstatic love manifested in the body of the king. The king then began to speak to the Lord with utmost humility. The Lord showered his merciful benediction on the king and told him that he came to Neelachal only for the sake of Rai Ramananda, Sarvabhauma, and Pretaparudra. Like, there's that one, there's that famous kind of like simple kind of like sketch drawing. Lord Chaitanya is sitting there, and then there's Lord Nityananda Gadadhar Pandit, Haridas Thakur. It means there's a little kind of like, you know, like a temple thing. Then Haridas Thakur is kind of in the back, hanging up a katha.
Yes.
Yeah, and then in the front.
It's Pretaparudra paying dandavas.
Yeah, Pretaparudra paying dandavas. Yeah. He also told the king that he should not reveal the actual identity of the Lord, who was enacting the pastimes of a covered incarnation, because he had saw that he is Jagannath. He says, you know, you don't reveal this. So even though he's being chastised, but he still is, it's revealed that he's, yeah. For as long as the Lord is present on this planet, the Lord then, okay, he should not reveal the actual identity of the Lord who was enacting the pastimes of a covered incarnation for as long as the Lord was present on the planet. In other words, afterwards, then he can describe. The Lord then offered the garland he was wearing to the king and gave him permission to leave. Conclusion. Devotional service is so exalted that it can be executed by anyone in any position. One must simply be dridhavrata, firmly determined. Madhya Lila 11:50, purport. A devotee with Maharaj Pretaparudra's determination will certainly be victorious in advancing in Krishna consciousness. Sri Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita 9:14. Always chanting my glories, endeavoring with great determination, bowing down before me, these great souls perpetually worship me with devotion. Okay. Because that's the 9:14.
Yes.
So you might indent that. There are symptoms of a Mahatma. These are the symptoms of a Mahatma engaged in the Lord's service in full Krishna consciousness. Thus, Maharaj Pretaparudra's determination is very much exalted and is called Dridhavrata. Because of this determination, he was finally able to receive Lord Chaitanya's direct mercy. Madhya Lila 11:48, purport. This is an excellent example of Dridhavrata, determination. One does not receive the Supreme Personality of Godhead's mercy, one's life is defeated. In Srimad Bhagavatam 5:5:5, it is said, "Unless one inquires into spiritual life, everything is useless. Without spiritual inquiry, our labor and the object of our labor are simply a waste of time." Madhyalila 11:49 purport. Yeah, so that's as we were discussing before. Everything that we're doing, we have the direct activity of always doing things in connection with the Lord, right? That aspect is there. Everything else that we're doing to support that, it has its value as long as it's connected to that. And if it's not, it's a waste of time. Okay, Madhyalila 11:49 purport. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was astonished because such determination is not possible for a worldly man attached to material enjoyment. The king certainly had an ample opportunity for material enjoyment, but he was thinking that his kingdom and everything else was useless if he could not see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is certainly sufficient cause for astonishment. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said that bhakti, devotional service, must be unconditional. No material impediments can actually check the advancement of devotional service, be it executed by a common man or a king. In any case, devotional service rendered to the Lord is always complete, despite the devotee's material position. So whatever you do it, then it's always perfect. And then, because we're always engaged, we're always trying to do for them, then next time we'll try to do it more nice. Even if it didn't work out, it's still perfect because it was done for the Lord. The next time, Krishna may arrange it, comes out better. Madhyalila 11:50 purport. Such determination is the first qualification. As confirmed by Rupa Goswami, Upadeshamrita 3, Utsahan Nishchayad Haryat. One must first have firm determination, firm faith. When one engages in devotional service, he must maintain this firm determination. Then Krishna will be pleased with his service. The spiritual master can show the path of devotional service. If the disciple follows the principles rigidly and undeviatingly, he will certainly receive the mercy of Krishna. This is confirmed by the Shastras. Madhyalila 11:52 purport. Devotional service is so exalted that it can be executed by anyone in any position. One must simply be dridhavrata, firmly determined. Madhyalila 11:50 purport. Right, so the path is there, but it's very rigid, because it's about what the rigidity is about, no karma, no jnana. That's the rigidity. The other things then are according to your position, what you can do, how much you can do, what's the circumstance, these kind of things. But it has to be without karma and jnana, like that. So that's why one has to be very, very aware, because maya will trick us. Because things can be used in Krishna's service, but then taking that oh, okay, if I cook nicely, I'm cooking for Krishna, if I get nice paraffin, utensils, then I can cook better for Krishna. But you have to be careful that maya doesn't trick you that, oh, without good paraphernalia, I can't cook. Mm. Like that. Because she's very clever. Mm. The point is no. Cooking, that's the principle. These other things are help. And if they're there, they're nice. Sometimes you have nice arrangements, sometimes you don't. That's the way it goes. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai.